Hi guys, welcome to Microsoft Build 2017. Thank you so much for joining the session today. Today we're going to talk about delivering world-class game experiences using Azure. Quickly introducing myself, my name is Gautam. I work as Senior Program Manager at Microsoft in Developer Experience Group. Today we're going to talk primarily three things. We will have a very high-level Azure overview for folks who are relatively new to Azure, game developers, indie game developers, or game studios who are looking to move their cloud back on Azure. Second, we're going to talk about common Azure game scenarios that we see, and also based on experience with the game studios that we have worked with, what are the common game service architectures that we see on the cloud? And third, we will dive a little deeper into the experience of building Hitman game from their makers, IO Interactive. So, on Azure today, we actually have a lot of great games running in production already, starting from our own first-party games like Halo 5, a big AAA game studio, in-house game studio, and they have this title, to console game like Hitman from IO Interactive, and also a PC game, a web-based game like Age of Ascent from Iliad Games in the UK, to a mobile game, very famous and popular on iOS, from Next Games, The Walking Dead, No Man's Land, based on the popular TV show. This session is really about the different lessons we learned from working with these different game studios and partners, and getting it all together and packaging that to you in this session. Before we dive into Azure, let's take a step back and look at what options Microsoft has for game developers like you. So if you look at this stack in this slide, let's start with the bottom band, which is Azure. So essentially, if you look planning to build your game backend and you want to put that on the cloud, Azure gives you the basic building blocks that you need to make this happen. So Azure essentially gives you compute services required to run your game. Then you have game data services to store your game data, player management data, game logic state, etc. And also game analytics. So today, free-to-play games is sort of the norm, and it's very different model than in the past. Era where people would pay the cost of your game upfront. So in game analytics services, what you could do is things like understand your behavior of the players, understand what is selling well so that you can monetize your game very effectively. And we'll talk about this in little detail later. And also the basic networking services. Let's say you already have an existing on-prem infrastructure, be it in your own data center or with a hoster. How do you connect that to Azure? Or how do you even connect the different services within your cloud to each other? How do you manage the load? How do you balance them? All those things, basically networking services. Now, on top of that band, we have the Open Xbox Live band. Essentially, Open Xbox Live is a collection of managed game services built on top of Azure. If you followed us in GDC early this year, we made a bunch of announcements there, and we opened up the SDK to platforms beyond Xbox and Windows for other mobile platforms as well, and we launched the Xbox Live Creator Program. So you should definitely check them out. They have a few services which you can readily use out of the box, done for game developers. If that's also your need, you should start there and then go down to Azure. And as Microsoft, we love partners, and we have a great partner solutions available running on Azure today. Example, Photon, a multiplayer engine from Exit Games runs on Azure. You can deploy it on Azure. And a lot of gaming as a service partners like GameSpark, in the Western world, Shepherds and PlayBlazer from Asia, they have catalog of services for player management, level design, score management, etc., where you can just plug and play and run. And now when you're building your game, which is the topmost layer, you can be building a mobile game, a web game, or a console game, and even there, you know, the tools that you would use with most of the top, you know, gaming engines like Unity and Unreal, they have good, relation with us from a Visual Studio tool perspective, and they use Visual Studio as a first party choice to for all development, right? So that's how you basically touch, Microsoft in your, various life cycle. Now let's take an example. Let's say you're building a game. Where do you start? Actually, you can pick and choose the different blocks, whatever serves your need. As an example, if you're first time moving, say your existing cloud backend servers to the cloud, you can start by picking a virtual machine in under Azure to run your game server. And probably say for achievements module, you can look at Xbox Live as an option. And to if you want to enable multiplayer session management capability, you can look at Photon server and deploy that on Azure. And all of these three things together can basically be your cloud backend. And we will dive deeper into these topics today. And in this session specifically, we'll focus more on the Azure layer today. Okay, now let's step the gear to the Azure overview. First things first, so what is Azure really? Azure is essentially a collection of enterprise grade services to run mission critical applications on the cloud. In this case, of course, games. There is a lot of, different services, and this slide is quite mouthful. So from your perspective, just connecting this back to the previous slide, all you need to think about is you have, services to run your game compute, game data, game analytics, and networking. And we will dive into these topics later in the session today. And Azure lets you develop with technologies of your choice. And Azure is an open and flexible platform. What does it mean? On Azure, you can run any type of game, be it a mobile game, an online social game, or a PC and a console game. You can be targeting any type of game client. It could be Android, iPhone, Windows Phone, Windows PC, on console, Xbox, or even PlayStation. And if you're specifically targeting, mobile platforms, we have excellent support with Azure Mobile Services, which gives you SDK on the client side, through which you can connect to Azure very seamlessly and have a great productive experience for developers. And you can be any type of company, and Azure has a very flexible payment options. For example, if you're an indie developer or a small game studio, you want to start with a simple web direct, pay as you go, payment model and pay only for what you're using, perfect, you can start there. Yeah, if you are an enterprise, large game studio and you want to basically looking at an enterprise agreement kind of a payment option, you obviously have the two. And what does it mean from a technology perspective? You have a broadest selection of options for your operating systems, for your programming languages, open source frameworks, tools, and databases. For example, you can obviously choose Windows, you're talking to Microsoft, or obviously different flavors of Linux. If you want to do containers, yes, Docker's too. If you want to use database or a first-party SQL database or MongoDB, which is very popular with game developers, and so on and so forth. So what does this really mean to you as a game developer or a game studio? Basically, if you are coming to Azure, you don't have to reinvest in skill set of your team. And Azure, gives you a choice of different technology options. All million of developers, use today, and they trust and they leave and they breathe. So you can easily come to Azure. And Azure gives you the capability to reach your gamers worldwide. What does this mean? If you look at our global footprint of Azure data centers today, we have about 38 Azure regions worldwide. We are actually almost double compared to AWS, and that's a huge differentiator on Azure. And also we're making huge capital investments to increase our global data center footprint. As an example, we recently launched data center in Korea, which is a huge gaming market. And we are the only public cloud in China, which is another huge mobile gaming market. But what does this really mean to you as game developer again? What this means is you can have your game backend logic as close to your players as possible. That basically means less latency and great game experiences, which means to you more money, which you can monetize. And second, if you are really looking up to some of the platform as a service offerings on Azure, for example, SQL DB or Document DB, it has some out-of-the-box features to replicate your data across the data centers very seamlessly. For example, if you take Document DB, for example, which is very much similar to MongoDB in terms of the NoSQL data that you would handle there, in Azure portal, you actually have a screen which has a global map like this. Initially, let's say you targeted US as the market, and as sort of you saw interest in the game coming in from Asia, and you want to now cater to that audience more effectively. Literally, what you do is on the in the Azure portal, you click on the Asia data center and hit on a submit button, and you're done. And in a matter of minutes, your entire data replicated in the Asian data center. You're now closer to the users. Think about doing such a thing in an on-prem world. You know, the kind of skill set you need to have, the amount of work that goes into it. It's sort of done seamlessly as a magic for you. So that's the benefit of, you know, moving to Azure and using platform as a service offerings. And next, you know, it's very important, you know, for game companies to have be able to reliably scale at a moment's notice. Basically, this notion of hyperscale. When we worked with, you know, the game studios, these were the learnings that we, you know, really came through. Predicting resources usage is really hard because we worked with, you know, a small, you know, game studio. It was their first game on public cloud. They were not very sure how popular the game is going to be. They planned, you know, for a maximum of 1,000 users, say in a month's time, and that's what they really started with. But then they realized the game really got quite popular, and they actually started hitting about 2,000 to 5,000, you know, users, and they could actually, you know, manage because they were on Azure and they could really, you know, scalable architecture that they had, which brings the second point on the slide. They were able to scale automatically, fast, and when they need it. And also, it's important to be able to absorb the largest resource utilization spikes one might expect. For example, let's say you're launching multiple game titles around a holiday season and you have this massive spike. You obviously need to be able to handle that, and that doesn't mean and shouldn't mean that you are buying a huge hardware and managing, you know, the cost required to keep the service up and running. At the same time, when you are past that, you know, spike of holiday season, you should be able to very easily take it down, and then again manage your cost. And also, on a daily operations perspective, it's very important that you are able to quickly provision and, you know, in parallel create thousands of, you know, virtual machines or Azure resources, because even in within the day, you know, there could be a huge demands and pipes. You shouldn't be required to have idle capacity to be planned in advance. In Azure, for example, in a matter of seconds, not even minutes or days, you can provision kind of VMs, and hence you can really scale up and down as you want, and then it's a great you know, thing to have at your fingertips. Now, from a hardware perspective, you know, on a data center, we have made a lot of good announcements in the last 1 year. First one being, you know, F-Series, you know, virtual machines. Basically, what F-Series is all about is it's high-speed, compute-intensive virtual machines, and they use the latest Intel Haswell class CPUs to give you really good performance. Basically, in F-Series, what happens is the CPU to RAM ratio is around 1:2. Like, you will have a 2-core 4GB machine, for example. In the past, before F-Series, if you needed high CPU, you only had to look at D-Series machines, and they generally have a very high memory, which you didn't need it, but you also had to pay the cost of a D-Series. So by using F-Series, your cost goes significantly less compared to D-Series, but you still get the same performance that you need for a compute-intensive workload like gaming. And also, N-Series virtual machine is very interesting. They basically are GPU-based virtual machines for you in the cloud. We're seeing a couple of trends in the gaming industry today. One is even for 3D rendering, for the 3D models, you know, modeling that you would do even before, you know, getting the game out there, instead of like buying this huge, crazy, you know, big, you know, workstations and then working on that, and then you're, you know, rendering, you're waiting for it to come back and all of that, people are looking at an option whether they could actually keep all this, you know, big workhorses on the cloud. You just VPN to it, and you do your stuff, and then you basically do the 3D modeling, and it all stores on the cloud, and so there's no time lost in, you know, uploading and downloading this, you know, huge amount of assets it creates. And you know, can you really do that? And obviously, you would need GPU to be able to do all of that on the cloud. And from a gaming perspective, another trend that we're seeing, especially with 5G coming in and the bandwidth, you know, becoming so fast, you know, imagine, you know, let's say a space combat Star Wars sort of a game. And you have thousands of spacecrafts around you, and they're shooting at each other, hitting the, you know, other buildings and you know, or the spaceship, and the debris is falling on you, and you need to compute this and visualize the whole experience, the lighting and shading. Instead of you doing all of that on a game client, which is limited on a CPU, would it be nice to put all this physics-based, you know, computations and run it on the cloud? We're basically on a GPU-based virtual machines. And many of the gaming studios are exploring that, and you can definitely try that out today and, you know, do such things on Azure. And also, it's very important, you know, very fundamentally to have high reliability on virtual machines, and we take this very seriously in Azure Engineering. Obviously, we, you know, have our SLAs. We recently announced a single VM SLA as well, and we monitor this almost on a weekly basis, and it's going pretty up, and it should definitely look up to Azure, and then it can serve your needs. So now, let's take a pause and watch, you know, what our friends at Next Games did for the game Walking Dead: No Man's Land, and let's hear it out in their own words.
We're really proud of the fact that we're actually helping humankind learn how to rebel the walkers and stay alive. Azure is a key part in that training. You have to be able to do that 24/7 just to be ready. Walking Dead: No Man's Land is based on the AMC TV series. We can actually provide new content after each episode within 24 hours. I pretty much knew that with choosing Azure and Microsoft, I would be guaranteed with better support than I would get from any other cloud providers. We know that there's somebody there looking after us. In Azure, we have, I don't know how many hundreds of servers, but then again, why would I care? It's cloud. The latest addition that we've been starting to use in Azure is DocumentDB, which has really helped us to make our development cycles faster, and that actually enabled us to create a very engaging player versus player experience within the game. Many of the things that we would usually need when we're doing backend are already pre-figured out for us by Microsoft. And we were able to deliver such a high-quality, engaging game with stunning graphics, good gameplay, and reliable technology.
Awesome. In fact, incidentally, our biggest customer for DocumentDB is actually them, and it's a gaming company. So that will tell you how much of data processing any gaming company would need. And then they're awesome partners. And in fact, they have a session of their own at Build. And Kale and his colleague is presenting on their experience. So I would strongly encourage you to watch that session as well. Awesome. Now, let's switch gears to the second agenda item for today, which is common Azure gaming scenarios that we see and typical architectures that we see around that. Let's start with game compute. So what's the scenario here? This is the most basic scenario. You basically want to get your game servers, which is managing your players, your game logic, any sort of communication between the players or the different services, different mission, all of that, you know, on a compute node, right? So there you have obviously a couple of options. So you can start with the most basic option, which is virtual machines, which is generally referred as infrastructure as a service. So what happens there is you can choose Windows or Linux based on what you need. And you get a virtual machine up and running on the cloud. You can migrate pretty much if you already had an Hyper-V or any such, you know, virtualized environment already on-prem. You can easily migrate it to the cloud. But there you have complete control. You also have full flexibility, but you also need to manage. That responsibility is on you. You need to patch the operating system, keep it up to date, running and everything. At the same time, if you look at, you know, our PaaS services, like say App Service, for example, There you really don't deal with VMs, though you know exactly what you're running on. You can pretty much get your stuff up and running over there, and we will manage the virtual machines for you. And obviously, you have less control and flexibility, but that's not really true. But you can, if you want to, you can go as deep as you want. But then we take off a lot of responsibility from you, so you can focus on a game logic and your code than really managing the infrastructure. And you have a lot of options in between. For example, if you want to run any container or container orchestration based logic, you can easily do it on Azure. In fact, Azure Container Service on Azure is the only service on public cloud market today which supports all the three top container orchestration tools, basically Kubernetes, DCOS, Mesosphere, and also Docker Swarm. And also, if you're looking to build a microservices architecture, we have Service Fabric. In fact, most of our first-party services like SQL DB and even Skype and Bing, many of such services run on top of Service Fabric, and we also can provide you, and we're seeing a lot of traction with that service. I'll talk about that architecture a little later in the deck. And also, if you're looking at very high-level functional service new trend and quickly do some things, connect disjoint things, and that sort of a thing, and you also have functions. And also, if you are typically a web-based game developer, then you can obviously look at WebApp too. It's a great option to host your entire game in a web app. Or if you're just hoping an API or REST APIs and do it, you can still look at web apps. And the best part is you can also bring any other custom compute solution like a Photon server, for example, from a marketplace and run that on Azure. So there is really nothing that limits you from running anything else as well. And for all the options that we have, you can scale automatically and on demand as you need it. Now, let's talk about data, right? So what are the scenarios here? So you might already have a database that you're running on, let's say MongoDB. You want to run a MongoDB on a virtual machine on Azure, very happy, you can do it. Or if you're okay considering platform as a service offerings, you get a ton of benefit in doing that. You have, again, a lot of options, like a blob storage. We typically load things like image, basic data, basic binary stream of data, really, or table, which is sort of a low SQL, very scalable storage solution. If you're looking at a relational SQL database, we have SQL DB, which is sort of our version on the cloud, which you can look at. Or if you're looking at a NoSQL database, you can use DocumentDB, and I talked about DocumentDB earlier. And NextGames uses it extensively. And also you can, for a leaderboard sort of a scenarios, you can, Redis is a very good option, and we have a support for it, like first party in Azure. Or if you look, dealing with big data, you have things like Data Lake, Data Factory, HD Insight, you can look at that too. Or again, if you're very niche scenario, you want to use things like Cassandra or DataStax, you can also bring those services and run it on top of Azure over here. So it's all about data storage. Where you can store your game data, player logic, state information, etc. Now, the third scenario where everything sort of comes together, and it's very important for game developers, especially in the free-to-play model, is analytics. When we talk about analytics, there are really three scenarios, right? One is when you have your game running, you want to know what happened in the game, like what users are doing in my game. What weapons are they buying? Specific level are they more inclined to buy something new, which will increase my app monetization? Just your player behavior, understanding that past data is super important, so that in the future you can target the right moment of time to throw up a weapon, or let's say they are losing. Or dying after the third level, you basically prompt there saying, hey, just pay like whatever, $1, and then you basically can get life and continue from where you are and things like that. So that's very important. Second scenario is what's happening right now. In fact, cheating is a big problem in gaming. So there's some weird behavior somebody has figured out, and let's say a level actually takes 2 minutes to cross, and then somebody's able to do it in like 30 seconds, there's something fishy going on. Right, and also if somebody has like bought huge weapons and then basically killing the experience for others, which you didn't want to basically happen in the game, you can analyze these things as the events are happening currently, real time. And third is, now that you have these two sets of data, What can you do in the future? What can you predict in the future and control it to optimize your game monetization? So that's what this game analytics is all about. And we're seeing a lot of, you know, game studios really start Azure with these set of services and then really going beyond, because you can actually have your, you know, computer on AWS, for example, and still be able to run analytics on Azure, actually. And we're seeing a few cases like that as well already. So in analytics, you know, we have set of services. Event Hub lets you ingest data at scale. Stream Analytics lets you analyze this data real time. Second scenario. Third is, you know, since there's a lot of data being collected, you want to be able to store it in a big data store like Hadoop. HD Insight is basically our implementation of Hadoop. It supports all the different things that you would expect. And also we have machine learning and cognitive services. So they're basically a set of, you know, cognitive services, a set of APIs to analyze a lot of things like text, vision, and computer, which you can use. Machine learning is interesting, where you can sort of, you know, the way we call it, like a data scientist, you know, data science for everybody. We're like trying to democratize, you know, data science for people with machine learning. You can build models by literally dragging and dropping, you know, all the algorithms, you know, based on, you know, huge research from Microsoft, and then connect these things and then train your model on the data as they're coming in, and they get better to basically tell you with, you know, future predictions, you know, hey, get this weapon at this point of time to basically get this done. Now, let's say you have a cool weapon, you know, and you probably thought, you know, people would buy it, and then nobody is able to even get to that level to basically see that weapon. And probably want to position it a little different place. You know, things like that, it can easily tell you with all this information. Also getting the player information. And we'll talk about this in a demo very soon. Now that you have all this intelligence, you want to be able to see this data, you know, visualized, so that you can take action. And that's where the power of Power BI comes in, where you can visualize this rich data, and we will talk about it. Now, let's now that we know the services and the scenarios, now let's put these things together in a game service architecture. And these examples are really built on the real-world examples of the partners that we have worked with. So the first one is the super simple game service architecture, which we see most common with mobile games and even PC games to a certain extent. Here, it's very simple. You have a game client, you know, mobile, PC, console, whatever it is. And then you have your sort of a web logic or in general, you know, cloud logic, which will run on some sort of a compute. It could be as simple as a virtual machine, or it could be PaaS service like web apps, app service. Or even a serverless compute, like, you know, functions, for example, right? So you have, you know, set of services to do that, and you get load balancer, you know, in Azure, which will basically manage the load to these servers, and to manage your data, which is like your player state, you know, the game assets, and different, you know, stuff. You have the database that you can use, and all the options we discussed. You can use DocumentDB, SQLDB, Redis Cache, and then you have them, and then they're also, you know, scalable. This is the most basic, you know, architecture that we have. And in fact, all the architectures we're talking about in this session today are all available to you to just download and play with it. So let me give you a demo of that. So if I go to GitHub, I'll share the link with you in the session. You can go here today and actually play around with these architectures. So here, basically, we have something called as ARM template. So if you're new to Azure, what is ARM? ARM is basically Azure Resource Manager template. Basically, it's a way of defining all the different services you need in your architecture and sort of putting them together. And then you can hit on literally a button called deploy, and it will deploy all of that to Azure so that you don't have to worry about, you know, getting all this stuff installed, stitching them together, and things like that. So let's go to the simple game service architecture. And as you can see, there is this button called Deploy to Azure. So all you need to really do is click on this button. And if you already have an Azure account, like I do, it takes you to the portal directly. Maybe later. OK. So what happens here is, you know, in ARM template, you can define basically what are the basic configuration details you need to collect so that it can deploy the environment as you need it. So here as it is deploying to my, you know, internal consumption subscription. It is creating a new resource group. Resource group is a collection of all your related services. So I'll say Game 20, for example. It's deploying to Eastern US data center. That's great. I'll say build demo I'll give a username and password, and I'll say pin this to dashboard, and then I'll say, oh, it's fine. And then I'll say purchase. Okay. Oh, I need to agree to the marketplace statement, and then I'll say purchase. Awesome. Now what it's going to do, it's going to validate this template and actually deploy this to the Azure, right? So while it is deploying, you know, it takes a few minutes to do it. Let me show you how it actually looks like when you have deployed this, right? When it deploys, this basically deploys these following services for you. It gives you Event Hub for, you know, ingestion, which you might need it in the future, even in this architecture. It gives you a simple storage account. It gives you a SQL server on a VM. It gives you a SQL database. It gives you a website. And also, it gives you an app service plan, which basically defines the billing around your app service and scalability options over there. So these are the, you know, different things it installs. Now you can just go to Visual Studio, you know, and then just connect to this and, you know, get started. If you say don't need any service, just delete it completely. It's everything is customizable for you. Now, if you remember the scenario I was explaining on my first slide, I said you can obviously, you know, do these things on Azure, but you can also get a partner, you know, solution and deploy. So let's say you do that right now. For example, Photon. So I can just go to plus and then say search for Photon. It brings up that it already has an image for Photon Server version 3 single node. I click on that. It brings up, yes, that's exactly what I'm looking for from Exit Games Publisher in compute category. And it will tell me that it is, you can provision this on a bring your own license enabled. Basically, you have get a license from them, you can deploy this and you can run it on Azure. And you can now hit on create, which will basically really create a virtual machine, package all the, you know, Photon Server code on it, and then makes it available for you. And you can now just connect to this from your code and then up and go, right? So this is how simple is it to really run or, you know, deploy anything on Azure. Cool. Now let's get back to the presentation. Let's move on to the, we did the demo. Let's move on to the second architecture, microservices architecture. So this is something very interesting, and you should definitely consider this if you're building a new game and a new architecture from scratch, and you have a, you know, relatively, you know, complex game, or you want to use the same, you know, cloud logic for say multiple games in the future. I strongly encourage you to look at this architecture. So our first party service fabric is basically based on this architecture, and in fact Hitman game we'll talk about later also uses this architecture in behind hoods. So in a microservices architecture, what you really do is you break your game logic into different modules. And it is based on actor framework, so where you can create stateful and stateless services. Here, let's say red boxes, you know, signify stateful services, and yellow are basically stateless services. So what a stateful service means is you can put the data and the app logic together in the same box. So that way there is like almost like no latency. So they exactly know the state. So it's easy, very easy for this particular solution to be replicated and, you know, scaled out very easily. So that's benefit number one. And also, let's take an example of Age of Ascent, which actually uses this service fabric behind the hoods. So they created, you know, each of the spaceship in that Star Wars combat style game, each spaceship is actually an actor. So what happens is, you know, let's say you have hundreds of, you know, spaceships around you and everyone is an actor, you need to be able to manage the state of, you know, each spaceship in your game. And though there are like 1,000 games around you, you're probably most concerned about, say, probably spaceships around a radius of, you know, a manageable, you know, distance, right? And that's what's going to affect your state most likely. Others obviously are important, but you can adjust it later because we're really far in the distance, right? So now to be able to manage the state of a single spaceship, they actually use an actor model and build a whole game logic around that. And the benefits that you get here is like in my, you know, I really think it's magic. So let's say, you know, this particular server here sort of, you know, goes down. Oops. Let's say this server here, you know, basically goes down. So then what basically happens instantly is that, you know, these two services here basically will, you know, go automatically to a different server, and Service Fabric does all that for you. You don't even have to know that this actually happened in your thing. And also it will automatically bring up a new server in a cluster. So everything is around a cluster. You deploy certain missions in a cluster and everything's managed within the cluster. And let's say now you want to update your game, which you do all the time, you know, in today's world. You don't have to take your, you know, gamers down when you're updating your game. You can release a new update. Server by server, it will go and basically, you know, update this. It's a very seamless experience. And say something goes wrong, then it automatically rolls back all the updates. And, you know, and that's one of the benefits you get. And you get complete monitoring to what's happening and everything. It's a beautiful architecture, and Age of Ascent uses it, and even Halo uses it to a certain extent. So it's a beautiful architecture, and we're seeing a lot of traction and, you know, on this architecture here. And you, okay, for deploy it, you also have the ARM template to do that in the same link I showed you earlier. Now, the third option is this, which is a session-based multiplayer architecture. Basically, Exit Games, you know, Foot-On Server uses this similar architecture. Even our first-party console games uses this to manage multiplayer session management service. So what happens here is, of course, you have a game client, but you have multiple game clients, and you basically need to be able to enable communication between these multiple games. Let's say, for example, it's a first-person shooter game, and then I'm playing it for the second time or third time, but I want to try out multiplayer. I want to be matched with another gamer of my same skill ability, and your game should be able to provide that experience. Otherwise, if I'm up with an expert who's played the game for years, I'm going to die in like every you know, few minutes, and I'm probably going to lose interest in the game, which is a bad thing for me, but also a bad thing to you as a game developer, because they're not going to pay money for your game, right? So what, you know, in here, what the architecture is, you will have something called as a master server. So the two game clients, when they say, hey, I want to join a game, they basically communicate to a master server. And master server has the details about the, you know, skill set of the player and all the rich telemetry of data. And then it will say, okay, fine, this game this game player and this game player of similar, you know, skills, I'll put their game on, say, game servers, which is in blue, you know, icons there, and they'll play on that server, right? So that I get a better experience, and you're able to manage all of it in the background. And then once the player's skill set will get, you know, increased, they can basically get to play with, you know, higher skill players. So this is how, you know, this works. You can run this on basic VMs, but on a virtual machine scale set is a good option here, so that you can scale things out easily, because you know the basic image of the VM is not going to really change. So this is the session-based multiplayer, you know, architecture. Now, moving to the fourth piece, which is the analytics gathering I talked about. This is the cool part, to me. What happens here is you obviously have multiple game clients, a lot of players are game, you know, playing the game. You want to understand what's really happening, what you can do about it, and how do you basically increase, you know, monetization from your game. So, as I said earlier, you will have an event hub, so which will ingest all the data from these different games. Then load it through Steam Analytics, where you can do you know, real-time analytics and show it off in a Power BI dashboard right there. Or you can put the data to any data store, really, Blob or SQL or a big data like HDInsight, and then visualize on top of it as well. So let's see a demo of, you know, how, you know, what kind of dashboards you can build and you know, and the power with that. Okay, so let me move to Power BI. Okay, so here in this demo, basically I've sort of built an event generator which will simulate this data, and you can actually plug this to a real game pretty much as is. It's also part of, SDK we built, and I'll show that to you in a minute. So this is Power BI. If you're, I'm sure you would have, you know, seen Power BI in the past. Here I have basically four games, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And in this first chart, I'm actually visualizing the number of active sessions per game. And you can see, you know, if for each game, you know, how they're behaving and how it's going up and down. And so now I know that probably my game number 4 is the most popular game and where I'm really making money, or at least I have player engagement. So I should focus on making money, you know, by delivering good experience and, you know, being smart about what assets I give there. And also I can keep account of on how many players are there for each games. You can see like about 20,000 people are there, and then also number of, you know, the average duration for each player when they're giving my name. But this is not a lot of data, but I want to really see where my players really coming from, you know, from which country, right? So the one of the cool feature of Power BI is actually you can almost in a conversational English, you can write and ask questions, and then you'll get data. For example, I just clicked on number of active sessions. Now I have actually 288,000 active sessions right now. Okay, awesome. I want to say per country, and it automatically gave me a bar chart. And if I scroll down, there is, oh my God, I have folks from really across the globe, but I'm not able to visualize where to have the maximum users in this view. So I'll say, hey, let's visualize this as a map. And there you go. So each bubble, you know, radius sort of, you know, defines the number of, you know, active sessions in that country, and it's a great view. But I still can't make out, you know, details because they're really spread out across the globe. So I'm going to do this now. I will instead visualize this as a field map. And this query will take some time to go back and populate. Huh, there you go. So you can see now that probably have the maximum customers from Germany in Europe, followed by probably Brazil, and then China, India, and the rest of the world. So now I know, I probably, for all I plan a marketing campaign, and to encourage people, I may want to invest in Germany, you know, South America, and then probably next China, you know. Oh, but surprisingly, there's not much in US, so probably I should do something different for US, you know. And the best part about this is you can actually pin this, you know, dashboards to your, you know, main thing if you make, if you think that's good. So have a little richer dashboard on the same data. So yeah, of course I have the number of active sessions here, but this is really giving me the answers that I was looking for right out of the dashboard. Here it is telling me where I have my most number of active sessions by country. I can see it's China, Germany, India, and so on and so forth. I have the same field map here, and I can actually see how many active sessions are per city across the globe. Now the beauty is I can actually filter things down. Let's say I want to know where are people playing from in India, and as you can see, the chart zooms in there. You can see all the cities, and I see 259 people from Ahmedabad and 127 people from Agra playing probably in front of Taj Mahal. That would be cool, and so on and so forth, right? But I want to go to a level deeper and really want to understand who is the player really who is paying for my game. Here you can see that I have basically So I have about 500, you know, players for my game right now. It's showing, and they're playing an average 150 minutes, you know, on my game. And now I want to know, let's say, who is it from, you know, US who's playing the game, and which cities are they playing from? Like Chicago. Okay, let's say who's playing from Chicago. I have really 15 players, and here in this report, I can actually see who are these 15 players and who is the player who's playing for the most, right? Now I can go to the next level and, you know, even track or build this dashboard on sort of a weapon or a secret outfit and things like that. So that once I have this data, now I know exactly which country to focus on, which cities to focus on, what kind of players to focus on. I can even gain a very personalized notification or a, you know, campaign to really, you know, get players engaged in my game. And that's how you basically convert all this richness of, you know, cloud computing to real money to you end of the day. Awesome. Now let's get back to the presentation. And the beauty, as I was saying earlier, is you can combine all of them in Azure very easily, seamlessly. You can start with one thing, you know, add more resources, you know, put them together, and it's like a combination of whatever we had earlier. And I'm adding, you know, Azure Active Directory additionally here to basically manage the authentication. In fact, AD has a lot of services like B2C is really meant for consumer, you know, needs, and you can really look up that. You can easily log in through Facebook, Google, any sort of, you know, standard, you know, identity providers you would expect. It, you know, it gives you support for all of that, and you can easily wire it up and, you know, get your games up and running with the power of Azure. We already see the game analytics demo. Let me introduce you to Nether. So what we've done in DX is in Microsoft, we sort of build this, you know, open source project, codename Nether, and we have it hosted on GitHub over there. So all the stuff I'm talking about, you know, is actually available in GitHub. You can deploy so that you don't have to start with, you know, basic building blocks, but you have sort of a stage or a foundation to start your projects from. So go have a look at it. Let me quickly demo actually a game that we have built using the different components of Nether. We actually worked this with in a So it's actually, I can log in through Facebook and it will actually populate the leaderboard that way. And I can see who is my friends on Facebook, how much are they scoring. So it gives that, you know, typical leaderboard competition among the people. I can actually do that. Or, you know, it's fine, I don't want to log in through Facebook. I've already logged in here and let me play the game right here in the store. Okay. So I've already logged in here. You can see my name G coming on the left top here. It's a typical space, you know, shooter. And you can see the level on the right top and my score is currently zero. Okay, finally I hit something. And it's now only in level two. I should see more enemy ships popping up there. Okay, now I die. So here you can see the leaderboard and obviously I have the least score in the game compared to my colleagues. And it has a score and then I can play again. So this leaderboard is actually a module. The score that you were seeing was actually a separate module. And then, you know, all these features is basically coming from Project Nether. So let me now take you to, let me close the game. Okay, so this is where the Nether GitHub repository is. If you scroll down and click on actually architecture, it will tell you what all services are already there. You actually have, we have written code for identity, player management, analytics, and leaderboard, which connects to database and, you know, analytics pipeline and a bunch of services together. So you can almost, you know, download this SDK, connect to this from Visual Studio or any of your favorite IDE, and then get you started with these services. And all of this is open source, so you can play with this data, play with this code, you know, modify it, and also learn from it. And we'll continue to make some, you know, enhancements over here. Awesome. Okay, so now let's switch gears to the last part of the presentation, which is really IO Interactive Hitman. So before we dive into the technical details, let's watch a quick video on what they had to say about building Hitman on Azure.
My name's Torben Ellert. I'm the lead online designer on the Hitman franchise, being developed here at IO Interactive in Copenhagen. The Hitman franchise is 20 years old. As we know, it's about the world's greatest assassin, Agent 47, a bald-headed, red-tied, snappily dressed guy who travels the world, meets interesting people, and then totally isn't there when they have tragic accidents. So, as we're filming this, we've just finished shipping the Hokkaido episode of Season 1 of Hitman. And this is the world's first episodic AAA game. And it's been a fantastic adventure to get to this point, both in terms of the game itself and how it's been received by players around the world, but also the long journey that we've been on to go from shipping a classic AAA game to shipping an episodic AAA game. And a big part of that has been our technology choices. And one of those technology choices was obviously working together with Microsoft, with the Azure Platform as a Service. It takes a very different mindset to make a game in this way. Not only because we're shipping it an episode at a time over half a year or longer, but also because we need to think about the game as a platform. We need to think about the game as a sandbox that is talking to servers and us looking at what's happening and creating new experiences based on that. So yes, it's a fundamentally different way of thinking about creating a game. It's enormously innovative. So it's almost like being an indie studio with the muscles of a AAA studio.
It was a fantastic experience to work with IO Interactive guys in Sweden, you know, on this game. Well, for one, it's an awesome game, one of my favorite games. But also, the way they looked at the game from a technical perspective, they actually call, you know, Hitman as a service, because there are a few things that are very unique to this game. First of all, it's an ever-expanding, ever-evolving game. It's digital-first, and it is episodic, as he explained. You know, they every time, you know, there's like a new season, and every few months they have this like a, you know, Japan season, like a Thailand season, a Paris season, a new content which sort of gets down to your basically console and you play this game. So and it's sort of a live content and online platform feel to it. So hence, you know, the game backend had to be tailor made to their needs. And since they were building this sort of, you know, amazing experience, they really want to focus on their game logic than, say, managing the infrastructure. So they really wanted to have off-the-shelf components to the most things that they would, you know, wanted to do. And they obviously wanted to have a managed infrastructure and a scalable infrastructure for their needs. And for the next three slides are really their slides and not my slides. You know, and Cristiano, you know, did this talk with me at GDC where he presented this slide. So why did they choose Azure? What they had to say about that was primarily they look at Azure as a platform as a service leader. And really the rich toolbox of services that we have on Azure, they can just pick what they need for the right job they have to do it. And then also, interestingly enough, the toolset familiarity with Visual Studio and C# was pretty handy for them and for their team. If you look at how their, you know, backend really was, they really took a sort of a web-centric, you know, approach. So all communication happens on HTTP, and of course, you know, passes through the firewalls, TLS encryption, and things like that. So it becomes really like a web app, you know, in some sense, it's a web application. And also, they on Azure, they used all the off-the-shelf solutions as much as possible for load balancing, auto scaling, client and server security, and all the web cloud solutions out there. And for the core architecture, they also used a microservices architecture based on an open source framework called Orleans, which is the same, you know, similar stuff which I explained earlier, which is sort of a version of a service fabric pass that we have on Azure. And I like this slide, the title that Cristiano gave for this. They really look at the service on Azure as the Agent 47's weapon of choice. They use a bunch of services on Azure. You know, a few of them we covered today in the talk, like web apps. We covered, you know, storage, SQL, stream analytics. They also use things like search, you know, App Insights, Data Factory, you know, etc. And they're a great partner. Okay, now coming to resources. So now that you have a high-level view and understanding of Azure services for gaming, we have a few templates for you to get started from a game architecture perspective. What are your next steps? First of all, you know, if you want to learn more about the solutions, the partners, technical details, all the link, this is the one web page you need to go. If you go to Azure.com, click on Solutions, and go to Gaming Solutions, you'll basically get to this page. It has links for pretty much everything I covered today. And also, we have a channel 9, you know, available where we have a bunch of, you know, technical videos on different aspects that I touched today in a much more depth. I would strongly encourage you to go look at it. We'll continue to invest, you know, put more content over there. And if you want to go deeper to understand how the Walking Dead game was built, in fact, Kale and his colleague are actually presenting a session at Build. I would strongly encourage you to go have a look at that session, and I'm sure, you know, you will like it. Call to action, check out the resources, the GitHub repository, the web and channel 9. Revisit the Build session recordings on channel 9, and you can continue your education on Microsoft Virtual Academy online. Thank you so much for your time.